From Akron, Ohio, this is episode 105 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we're going to talk about the new Don Hertzfeld short cartoon, World of Tomorrow. And then we're going to talk about three of our favorite tropes from World of Tomorrow. But first, as always, I'm your host, Nick Prime. And today I'm joined by...
Sir.
And Kyle Prime.
Sir Prime, what's new?
I'm actually the clone.
Oh, no. You're the second generation, sir.
Yeah, so, second generation.
Has there been any
mental deterioration?
Slight mental deterioration.
For those who have not yet watched World of Tomorrow, it is available on Netflix, at least in the States, and it's a joke from that.
Yeah.
any mental deterioration is from my memories of It Follows quickly deteriorating in my mind.
Nice.
yeah, I've been watching some movies lately. I watched It Follows, and I liked it when I first saw it. I'm not too thrilled with it right now. As the hours go by, I just keep thinking of things that I'm like. Yeah. I've been watching a lot of Outer Limits on Hulu. I took Nick's advice and got Hulu, and it's pretty awesome.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff on there, and the Outer Limits is really hard to find anywhere else. I mean, it's hard. You can't even really buy it, I don't think. I don't think it's on DVD yet.
I don't think so.
And it's not on YouTube anywhere. So Hulu is pretty much it. And some really good episodes. They're a lot longer than Twilight Zone. I mean, it's an hour each, which kind of makes for some somewhat boring TV. Some of them are kind of dated. Mm-hmm. However, the monsters and the Outer Limits are much more interesting. It's kind of more of a Monster of the Week show. And just seeing how these guys approach the... you know, these special effects can be kind of interesting. Mm. Kyle, what's new with you?
Not a lot. Trying to watch some of the Oscar-nominated movies this year. So I don't think I saw this last time we recorded. I saw The Martian with Lisa, and it was pretty good. I like the writing a lot. I think that Matt Damon's character is really... I don't know if he... I know he's nominated for Best Actor. Mm. I don't think he'll win, but I think it's more that what he was saying was really well written, and I think he's
very likable too.
Yeah, he's really likable, but it was kind of funny how almost you got mad at him for how smart he was in certain situations. Like he was just like the things he was coming up with while stranded were a little ridiculous. But yeah, it was a really entertaining movie, and I liked it more than Interstellar, I think.
Oh, I like it much more than Interstellar. I think Interstellar.
I liked a lot of the concepts in Interstellar with the time changing on the ship that the one guy was on, and how.
Oh, you mean that really interesting concept they don't explore at all?
Well, no, but like the fact that they like touched on that though is like really just ugh, and like just thinking like I know they didn't really go back to it at all, but just thinking that the guy was on that ship for that long, but then they go into that wormhole and the movie just sort of lost it for me.
Yeah. Somebody at work asked me if Matt Damon was the same character, if it was the same guy from Interstellar.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of thought, I mean, it's crazy how similar, like, because he was left behind and shit, but
that dude is always getting abandoned.
What I was thinking when I was watching The Martian is that this is Castaway but in space. Actually, Saving Private Ryan in space.
I think that's like the biggest insult you could have given this movie without really meaning to insult it. It's Castaway in
but
space.
That being said, I like Tom Hanks way more than I liked Matt Damon in each movie, but I don't know.
Yeah, but
I think I'm in the minority.
I do
here.
Like Jessica Chastain better than I like Wilson. So,
yeah.
One thing that's interesting about the book, Andy Weir, the guy who wrote it, when he was making it, he wanted the science to be as accurate as possible. So he had a blog where he'd just say, like, here's the situation. You're stuck on Mars and I want to grow potatoes. Can I grow potatoes? And a bunch of scientists would comment on his blog and be like, oh yeah, you just need to do this and this. And he's like, all right, well then next the guy's going to try to communicate. How best would he communicate? And that's how, like,
yeah,
it was just like a problem solving exercise and ended up
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, Ian just listened to the audiobook, and I'm sure the book just goes into way more of like what he's what he's thinking and everything. So I'm sure it's way better. But I like the movie a lot, though.
Yeah, I also caught up with another Oscar movie. I think it only got one for Best Supporting Actor, but I really, really, really dug Creed. I thought it was a really good movie. I like it better than Rocky. I know what I said.
Wow.
That's strong. I said what I said.
I know what I said.
That's strong. So you're saying it's not only the best sequel to Rocky, it's
the best Rocky.
It's the best Rocky, period.
It's quite good. Michael B. Jordan. I've said it before. Is the Michael B. Jordan of acting.
It's true.
Do they play the theme at all in that movie?
They do.
Yeah, it's like
do they remix it?
Yeah, like at the end, I know that there's like a piano
someone playing it version just like
in a bar.
Yeah, no, Hateful Eight.
I was going to say like in Birdman, they just walk past a guy playing it on the drums in the street. No, but I think Michael B. Jordan is really good. And
man,
Sly Stallone, not always have I been the biggest fan of him, but he's really damn good in this movie.
Yeah, and I think the emotional payoff or emotional dilemma, I guess you would call it not payoff, of the whole movie was like really effective. I knew a little bit about it going in.
I didn't know much about it going in.
It had been like a lot of speculation on what was going to happen with Rocky, and I knew something like that was going to happen. So I was kind of bracing for it, and I didn't think it would affect me. I was thinking, oh, this is like a cheesy thing that they're going to try to like rope in the old fans, and it totally worked. Like as I'm
watching, it totally worked.
It pulled me in completely.
Yeah, it. I think that or Room were probably the closest I came to crying like a small child last year during the movies.
Nice. You're going to see The Room, right?
No, that I'm talking about Room, not The Room. We'll get to that in an upcoming episode, though. And then we do have some feedback. Speaking of the Oscars, we were talking about how to pronounce certain people from upcoming Oscar nomination Best Actress.
Donald Gleason.
Yeah. Liam Tasker says, "Hi, Tropers. Blank is pronounced the exact same as the name Donal." He also says it's pronounced Searsha, and I've been pronouncing it Searsha like a dick.
I'm glad I pronounced it right when I was correcting, because I would have felt like an asshole if I was like, it's not this, it's this, and I was actually wrong too. Donal.
And he says, "Yes, Irish can be pretty confusing. I studied it all throughout primary and secondary school, and all I can reasonably say in Irish is ask how to go to the bathroom, because that was the only way to get out of Irish class."
Nice.
So thank you, Liam. I think we're pronouncing that right.
Yep.
Liam.
Yes.
Liam.
Liam.
Yes. Liam.
Liam.
So thank you, Liam. To scare. Yeah. So on this week's episode, we are talking about The World of Tomorrow. Or no, just World of Tomorrow.
Did you say it was Oscar nominated?
It is not Oscar nominated for Best Animated Short. And this is Don Hertzfeldt's second Oscar nomination for Best Animated Short. The first was Rejected, which is probably the craziest thing to ever be nominated for an Oscar. There is probably about a minute's worth of
someone's anus bleeding, a cloud's anus bleeding.
Oscar nominated.
Yeah.
Actually, in Don Hertzfeldt's Twitter page, his bio is director. I think it's director of things / Oscar loser.
Oh, do you know what he lost to?
I don't. But World of Tomorrow is up against another Pixar one that is actually a pretty highly regarded Pixar called Sinji Super Team, I believe. So I don't know if it's going to win against the Pixar Dynasty. It was before The Good Dinosaur.
I haven't seen that, however I did hear about it.
Neither have I. I've heard it was pretty good, though.
Oh.
So that's what he's up against. But in the meantime, World of Tomorrow, I think, is a fantastic short film, as noted in me having it in my top 10 best movies of last year.
Can I do the other best golden round things?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle.
Okay. I have many memories that I would like to share with you now, Emily. We can go visit them together, like seeing pictures in a book. Please follow me into the window.
circle.
Kyle, what did you think about World of Tomorrow?
I don't even know what I think. I've seen it 3 times in this past week, and it is such a strange movie. I don't even know like how to even like think about this movie. I think it's the concept is very different from what his other movies are typically. It's way more like sci-fi, I guess, and, mm-hmm. and going into the future and seeing like this grim future. And do you want to sort of explain what the premise of it is at all? Or?
Sure. So I guess just a brief primer on Don Hertzfeldt for people who aren't familiar with him. He's an animator who does just really goofy short animated movies, and his drawings are very rudimentary.
Yeah.
Stick figures.
But they're really well animated stick figures. Mm. Like they portray a lot of emotion with just a few simple lines.
Yeah. And his work is known for being kind of, we'll get into it in our tropes, I think, yeah. but a lot of it is very cynical and bleak, yeah. but funny. Mm-hmm. And this is, I think, his most plot-heavy work, where there's the most actual story to it.
Mm.
This is about a little girl named Emily who gets a phone call, and it is Emily from the future. And Emily from the future is basically a third generation, I believe.
Yeah,
clone.
Third generation.
Of
200 and something years in the future.
I think 227, something like that. she's a clone of Emily Prime, this little girl. So it's basically those two
talking
to each other.
Just talking the whole time. And the clone telling Emily what is basically about to happen to her.
Yeah.
Her and
technology.
Future in general, yeah. really.
And they're on the brink of the world
yeah.
becoming extinct in the future.
If it sounds like it's a downer, it's...
It can be.
Yeah, the thing is about his movies is they're not comedies, but they're not, like, incredibly serious. There are some, like, moments that you find yourself laughing at, but it's like, why am I laughing at this? Like, they're talking mm-hmm. about... For people who are dying, ripping off the faces of their deceased loved ones and putting them on animatronic like things that bounce up and down so they can feel like they're living with somebody, and it's like, and it's all animated, and that's, I don't know, it's like, it's so goofy when you see it because it's like, it's not taken seriously, but the fact like what he's describing is.
Kind of
really, yeah,
horrifying.
It's really dark, and talking about this clone exhibit that pops up, and it's people are watching Simon or David grow up, mm. and I don't know. It's just, I don't really know what to think. It is just a really odd movie that is. I don't think it affected me as much as what's the one that...
It's Such a Beautiful Day.
But that's more of a feature-length film. This one, it was just... I think it's a little too strange for me, personally. But I did really like a lot of the storytelling mechanics that he was dealing with. Like, I don't know. I think this is definitely one of his more unique movies. For sure.
Yeah, I think this is also his most visually compelling movie.
Because
mm-hmm. He usually doesn't even use color
very often,
in his
films. Except for, unless it's blood.
Yeah, that's like... true. He usually only uses a blood red color of either blood or yeah. a red balloon beating the shit out of a child. In Billy's Balloon, which we watched earlier. But this movie does have some beautiful moments of animation. I think the scene of third generation Emily and David when they're in the future,
mm-hmm.
Just kind of looking at the horizon. I just changed my Facebook background picture to this. Past guest AJ, I literally just changed it and AJ literally just liked it. So,
nice.
I think it's stunning. And then also the scene of all the
the millions of people.
Yeah, it kind of gives it away.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you already said that the world is doomed.
Yeah, but just their consciousnesses, which have been uploaded in a box, is kind of floating away, I think, is a great, gorgeous little drawing, too.
Yeah.
Sir, what did you think about World of Tomorrow?
I thought it was really good. I thought it was really thought-provoking. And I think I like anything in the theme of at least like taking a hard look at this huge technological apparatus we've created as humans. I think something like cloning there's a lot of ways that it could go wrong, or it can turn into something that's maybe unethical. And I think this movie really like followed that to its logical conclusions. Like what our current consumer based kind of ideology would do with that technology. It's kind of scary.
Yeah. The movie does have a lot to say about mortality, and basically the future. Emily tells Emily Prime that they've created this cloning mechanism that can essentially allow you to live forever, which is just a scary thought in general. B doesn't really pan out when you see
really work.
That she is having her own mental deterioration.
Yeah.
Bad things happen to the other clones that they see. And then C, the world is eventually going to come to an end.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the class divide around the cloning technology was especially horrifying. I was really happy that the animation was so crude. During points of it, the cloning alternative where they just take a
where they rip like, your face off.
Yeah, your loved one's face and put it on like a crude robot.
Yeah, yeah. I also really like the
robot. It's really scary.
The grandpa couldn't afford being cloned, so they
put him in a box. Yeah.
They put him into a box, and I think that best.
Well, they put
his consciousness.
Into a box. They just literally put him into a box.
Well, yeah, and
but that I think that like maybe 15 seconds worth of them explaining that best encapsulates the movie's perspective on mortality, which is his consciousness is put into a box that will live indefinitely, and they record messages from him, and the message is just, "Oh God." Oh God.
God.
Oh my God. Holy Mother of God.
Yeah.
Which is really funny, but then you think about it. And
it's really humorous. I thought it was really, it's really hard to get that.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I really like on Rick and Morty.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about that show all the time. However, I think, it shared the same brilliance that Rick and Morty has, where it's making you laugh and making you think, like, wow, this is really deep or really disturbing or really existential or whatever.
Yeah. But it does have uplifting moments. A lot of what they say towards the end, kind of future Emily's advice.
Her advice,
Emily's
what really brings it around. Because it's like, I just showed you a lot of really awful things in the last 10 minutes. So I'm telling you, you need to live your life this way because...
Yeah.
You're going to experience this, your clone's going to experience this.
Mm-hmm. And then I also like the time travel element that is involved here, where she gives her the advice and she goes, I remember hearing this advice from me visiting me as a child. So I don't know where it came from.
Yeah, I don't know where it originated. Yeah.
I really like that. I thought the trick ending was, I liked the, I didn't really like it so much because
were you hoping it would have cut earlier?
I mean, because it showed it to me. So I was already in that, I was already kind of committed to that reaction and that feeling about it, whether I was happy about it or not. I kind of was already in that. And then when she just fixed it, it was kind of like,
oh yeah, right. I guess,
like, what was the point,
if it would have cut if it would have cut 5 seconds earlier, the movie would have like
totally
the
different.
End would have been
I
so
still feel
different.
Like it'd be worth talking about. I just think would really be, I mean, he probably wouldn't ask her then.
Maybe
they go even
so
more
dark.
Depressing than it already is.
Like, wow, that would have been rough.
Nick, I wanted to ask you what you think the reasoning behind having like the little girl. I know you know like some of the behind the scenes stuff and why or who she is and where how they got the audio and
It was his niece. The Emily Prime is his niece who he basically just recorded and used that audio for the audio in this. She was, I think, 4 or something like that. And he just, I guess, followed her around with the microphone and recorded her babbling. And there's one of my favorite parts is where she just starts babbling things. And Future Emily goes,
I have no idea what you're talking about.
She's just like, yes. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Why he did that, I don't know. Maybe just
like
on the most basic level, it's a pretty cool thing to do and interesting challenge for a filmmaker to make a move that way. Maybe it adds a sense of realism.
Yeah.
You don't have to deal with an actual child actor, which could be challenging.
Yeah. I was just trying to think of like if there's a reason why there's this little girl who's talking about like what I had for lunch today and I have look at my cars and stuff.
Yeah.
Like directly contrasted with this
ultra serious
clone who is not like she shows no emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So she's almost like, and apparently she's going through some mental deterioration.
Part of that too though is I think that Emily Prime just is too young to get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a combination.
She's very naive, which is...
I think Clone Emily is clearly not like a regular human. She's not...
She's definitely unstable in many ways.
Yeah.
Especially with her relationships
inanimate objects and
aliens. Yeah, she falls in love with a rock.
Yeah.
I no longer fall in love with rocks.
And so, what's the monster's name? Simon.
Yeah, which... that was weird. I think I loved the whole disconnect between the two characters. I thought that was really cool. It was cool just to think about, and you know how if this happened to you, you know, we always see the person goes back in time and either it's an age where the kid would understand or they somehow magically make a kid understand something like this where you're not going to get it.
I guess that's another reason why it's nice that it's a little kid that they're not asking questions. Like if it was anyone older, they'd be like, oh my gosh, like what's going on here? Why when's this gonna happen? It's a little kid. She's just on rolling for the ride. Punches. Yeah,
yeah. They go to the outer net and she says a color and the outer net becomes the color and
brown,
she,
green, blue.
That's what she likes. I do really also like, just speaking of the Emily clones' relationships, the relationship with her and David, I think, is incredibly sad.
Yeah, well, because their on-screen relationship is about 15 seconds long. Yeah. Also,
and but like, she also says something along the lines of, we loved each other as if we were primes.
Yeah,
it's just makes me feel things.
Yeah,
I don't know, I really like,
there's a lot of like, and there's a part earlier where she works on the moon. Mm-hmm. And she's working with robots, and the only thing that she programs into them is to fear death or something.
They're solar powered, so they have to keep walking on the light side of the moon.
Yeah, so in order to keep them from like being like overshadowed by the Earth's shadow, they need to fear death, and like that's the only thing that they're programmed. And once she leaves that job, they're still circling the Earth because they're afraid, and like that's the only thing that they feel.
Yeah,
and they write poetry and fear death, and like that's,
I think, part of that though. Like, there's a parallel between those robots, which are basically immortal as long as they keep walking, and these people who are immortal as long as they keep cloning themselves. And the robots' lives are pretty pointless; they're just walking.
Mm-hmm.
You might say that our lives are pretty pointless too. Then, well, what are we doing? We're falling in love with rocks and Simon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When she shows the future, it's like, we're not really doing much. We're looking at screens and just, I don't know.
And a lot of the screens now are just people looking at other people on screens because nobody's actually doing anything anymore.
Yeah.
It reminded me, that part really reminded me. And I think one of the hosts of the Slash Film Cast said this. It's kind of like a Black Mirror episode condensed into 15 minutes.
Mm.
Just all this technology resulting in a world that is not really better.
Yeah.
It's very good. I hope it wins the Oscar.
If it does, he'll accept the award, I'm guessing. Like, it's not going to be one of those like weird... whole team or something.
I would love to see him.
I don't even know what kind of speech he would.
You know, he's make. The narrator for It's Such a Beautiful Day.
Yeah.
I would love to see him do an Oscar speech in the It's Such a Beautiful Day narration style.
Yeah.
All right. So that is our review of...
I was trying to think of something to say in that, but I couldn't think of any lines from the movie.
That is our review of World of Tomorrow. But it is also full of tropes. Kyle, what's your third favorite trope from World of Tomorrow?
I think my third favorite is probably interspecies relationship or interspecies marriage or dating or I forget what it's actually. The actual name is, let me see. Interspecies romance between Emily and Simon. But then she like it's an alien that she comes across, and I think the alien basically just follows her around for I think she says 7 years or something, and then she just quickly says we fell in love, and it's this really weird creature that I don't even know if they understand the same language. I think Simon is just kind of babbles around for a while, but there's a few times in this movie. I mean, we just mentioned it, how she falls in love with rocks or other weird things. And, I think this is kind of an interesting trope. And the part with Simon is probably one of the weirder parts of the whole movie, but,
yeah, mm-hmm.
That was
I think that goes along with the whole mental deterioration stuff.
Well, I mean, I think Simon's real though.
She would form a relationship with, I think it's some kind of monster.
And you do kind of think, I mean, this is all the clones, right? Most of the clones are probably at that level of deterioration.
Mental deterioration. Yeah, and I think there's a part where she kind of accepts that, or she's proud of how she can get sad because it makes her feel more alive, mm-hmm. and then that's where she says she no longer falls in love with rocks. So, I don't know. But yeah, interspecies romance, I think that's my third favorite. What about you, sir?
My third favorite one was the time travel stable time loop. Just that characters go to the past, and in the past they turn out to be responsible for the events that led to their present. I liked how in this one it did lead to that really cool moment that we mentioned earlier where she says some stuff to Emily Prime and she's like, you know, I don't really remember where this came from. I just thought it was kind of like, you know, we've seen that trope a lot. However, it actually managed to put some emotion into it, mm-hmm. put it in like an emotional context, which I thought was pretty cool. Really clever. Nick, what about you?
My number three is black comedy, which I think Don Hertzfeldt does really, really well. And I think this one does it too. My favorite instance is, we already talked about it in this episode, but it's they get the communique from the grandpa's consciousness and it's just, oh God, yeah. Oh God, oh my God, which is as funny as it is horrifying. And I think that's right in Don Hertzfeldt's wheelhouse where... Yeah. A lot of his cartoons, we were watching Billy's Balloon earlier, which is basically a 5-minute cartoon.
A balloon destroying a kid.
It's kind of similar to, like, I think it sets up, it's this happy little kid with a red balloon. It kind of sets it up like Red Balloon, that little that French short film, which is very just delightful and sweet.
And
this is a balloon beating and torturing this kid for 5 minutes. And you laugh at it because it's funny. But you also laugh at it because it's terrible. And I think that's what Don Hertzfeldt really excels in. And there are a few moments of that in this movie that I think he pulls off fantastically. So that's my number three. Kyle, what's your number two?
My number two is just Bad Future. And I mean, we are pretty sure we described the whole thing. Even though like they've perfected cloning and basically living forever, the world is still going to shit. So there is like a really beautiful scene that Nick was describing with everybody sort of sending their memories into space, but yeah, ultimately no matter how technologically advanced we are, it really can't save the planet. So I think that'd be my second favorite trope. What about you, sir?
My second favorite one was Death from Above, and it's just kind of, whether it's meteor showers, nuclear weapons, the end of the world, or occurs from Death from Above, I thought the way that everything kind of ends for the this cloned planet Earth being a meteor was kind of appropriate. It seemed like that would, yeah. I don't know, like with their technology, there wasn't so much that, I mean, there was a lot of stuff that could have survived. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was pretty thorough.
Yeah. That was another thing that was kind of like sort of messed up, but they kind of glossed over it, was when Emily Prime was asking if the people in space are okay. And the clone Emily was like, no, they're all dead. And like, there's just millions of them up there and they're falling down to Earth.
Yeah.
As like shooting stars or whatever she describes them as.
That's something that, it happens in the 100.
Yeah.
Is that show good?
I didn't finish the first season. However, that was due somewhat to getting slightly boring, and then I had other stuff to watch. I do want to finish it.
Oh, so you were making it seem like, oh, it's like it was
you I just didn't, lost I interest did, in it, but no,
I didn't you're... finish it because I got really busy with work, and then
but then it got boring.
The internet went out and they took it off Hulu and I couldn't finish it. No, it was I didn't finish it because I didn't like it.
I'm thinking it'll pick up a little bit, so I'm gonna try to finish it eventually. Yes, it was hard.
High in the sky hopes.
It gets to a point where it, like, it's good, and then it just gets to this weird point. So I don't know. It's I recommend that people check it out, like, see what you think. I couldn't say, you know, yes or no.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it. All right, my number two trope is wise beyond their years, and this is kind of a subversion of that trope. Wise beyond their years is typically when there's a child who is wise beyond their years. And in this, Emily, the clone Emily, does say that Emily Prime is kind of like her grandma, and she is the one imparting wisdom, and she is technically younger than Emily Prime, but she's not really, because she's time traveled. So this is kind of switching that idea on its head, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my number two. Kyle, what's your favorite trope from World of Tomorrow?
My favorite trope in, I guess, just Don Hertzfeld's, that's his last name?
Yes.
His movies in general is deranged animation.
It's also my number one.
The thing is, with that trope, it's not as prevalent in this movie as his other ones. I think one of the more deranged parts was the one where they talk about ripping the face off a loved one and putting it on an animatronic machine and sort of helping people feel comfortable. But yeah, I just think in general, his movies have this a lot. And it's, I don't know, it sort of makes the movies a little more unique in that you're watching these stick figures and then something will just happen. Like, I guess it's not super deranged, but when they show David sort of like shriveling up and dying and growing old, like it's kind of like messed up, but you also know you're watching this really sort of simple cartoon at the same time. So I don't know. I definitely think that this movie, compared to his other ones, it tones it down a little bit, but it's still something that happens in all of his movies, for sure. Deranged animation.
Most definitely.
Did you have anything else you wanted to... Or are you going to choose a different one?
No, I mean, I can't move away from deranged animation. It's just... it's his stuff is something that has to be animated.
Mm-hmm.
You could not do this live action. Or you could, but it would not work nearly as well. This is something that really relies on. And there are only a few, even of animated movies, a lot of them don't really use the form as interestingly as Hertzfeld does. And part of it is the simplicity of it is what makes it good. If his movies were done by, you know, high-end Disney animators or something like that, a bunch of Korean kids or wherever, you know, it...
I'm talking about, like,
you don't remember in the Clerks TV show?
Oh no.
Has the jury reached a verdict?
In the case of Jay versus Dante Hicks, we find in favor of...
We're sorry. Due to circumstances beyond our control, the script to the rest of the episode was lost on its way overseas. Luckily, the episode was finished by the Korean animators. We hope you enjoy the new ending.
We find in favor of...
Big American Party!
Yay!
Everybody disco dancing! Lots of fun, good time for all! I'm having very good time!
When the Korean animation studio loses the end of the episode.
Oh, I don't know.
Big American Party.
No. Bear is driving. How can that be?
Tom Cruise.
Anyways, it's really something that has to be animated in the style that he does it.
Yeah, and I love the fact that all of his movies are Don Hertzfeld's. They're not like... a big company. You can tell that they're like his babies. And in re-watching that rejected text commentary where he complains about having to animate like dancing clouds because
they were too tedious.
Yeah, they're too tedious. And it's like, that's cool that like you can tell he's just sitting by like doing it on his own and really just like, I don't know, it's really, yeah, it definitely needs to be animated and it's perfect.
Yes. Sir, what was your number one?
My number one was Clones Are People Too. And just usually clones in movies are really flat and really there to die. Or
harvest body parts.
Yeah, it's always something. Or they turn evil and they're trying to kill the original. So I thought it was pretty cool that they explored the concept a little further. And the thought that the whole population of Earth is made up of clones is terrifying. However, these clones were people too.
Yeah. That's something that they never really, feelings, you know? They never talk about is like the clones having kids. Like, yeah, it's like, I mean, I know it's a short movie, so they couldn't really get into that, but it's like, I think she has a couple relationships and they never really go into them very much at all, and it's almost just like everyone just is kind of living. They're not sort of, I don't know, loving each other.
The spark in humanity is definitely lost.
Yeah,
it's rough.
It's a downer movie. I'm surprised none of us chose an Aesop for this one.
I thought about it. I kind of didn't, just because I assumed that somebody else would.
I thought you might have brought it up, sir, but I don't know. The Aesop is just like the lesson of the advice that the clone Emily gives Emily Prime, just to live your life and something semi cheesy actually.
Now is the envy of all of the dead.
Yeah,
it's such a good line.
I mean, yeah, but
great.
It's
great stuff. Yeah. All right, so that is World of Tomorrow. A+.
Agreed.
It's a great film.
B+.
Get out. Get out of town. You guys, if people want to find more about us on the internet, where would they go?
They could go to facebook.com/onthetropes.
They could. Where else could they go, Kyle?
At iTunes at On the Tropes. Give us a rating and a subscription.
Yes, that is important.
Subscribe.
Important.
Please do that and tell all your friends to do the same, and we will appreciate it. You can also find us on tvtropes.org, and you can learn more about tropes used in World of Tomorrow. Please, if you have not seen World of Tomorrow, check it out. It's on Netflix, and if it's not on Netflix in your country, it's available for rent. You can rent it for 30 days on Vimeo, which is how I watched it the first time. It's very short. It's only 15 minutes long. I would strongly recommend it.
Say you can rent it for 30 days?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, as opposed to iTunes, you only have 24 hours.
Yeah.
Vimeo.
Most things, it's 24 hours.
That's a big difference. Yeah, step up your game, iTunes. iTunes just took an L right there.
Yeah. Well, technically, iTunes, you can rent it for 30 days, but once you hit play, you only have 24 hours.
Yeah. That's what I thought you were talking about.
That means if you run a Judd Apatow movie on iTunes, you won't be able to watch it
a couple of times.
You won't be able to finish it because his movies are so friggin' long.
That's another L.
Take that, Judd Apatow.
Yeah. He just took another L. Yeah.
What else? Is there anything else?
You can email us at onthetropes@gmail.com.
And, one thing I've been doing is I've been using Letterboxd. Not really a New Year's resolution because I don't do that, but my life resolution is to use Letterboxd a little bit more. So Letterboxd, it's spelled Letter, Letterboxd.
You mean like watching movies in Letterboxd?
No.
Yeah.
BOXD.com. So what this is a website that allows you to like rate movies, rank movies. So I have a few lists on there. I posted one on the Facebook already. It was my top 20 movies from 2015. With this episode, I'm working on my top 25 favorite short films of all time.
Hmm.
Number one is obvious. La Jetée.
Yeah, we know.
I know you know. But I'll probably post that, if I remember, in conjunction with this episode onto our Facebook. And I've got some other stuff on there. You can follow us. The account is On The Tropes. Sure. I'm keeping a list of every movie I've watched so far this year so you can see how much time I spend watching movies and how little time I actually spend working. And I do also have a list of the OTT retired movies. So for those of you who don't know.
Do they have to be in order then?
So those aren't in order. You can make it in order or not in order.
Oh, that's cool.
So the OTT retired movies aren't in order, and that includes Annie Hall, Under the Skin, Jurassic.
Just movies, not games then.
Yeah, Jurassic Park, Batman, Sin City, Holy Mountain, City of God, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I think a lot of those are only like person specific. Like Batman is just all of Batman for Themo.
I was just going to say Batman. Yeah. There's a lot of Batman movies.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is, I think, just Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for Kyle.
Yeah. And also, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if you guys wanted to use Annie Hall, be my guest.
Yeah.
Didn't I, like, sneak in a reference to one of those recently? I feel like I did.
Probably. Sneaky.
Yeah, because I watched the Tropies.
You listened to it.
Yeah, I actually watched it.
You wish you could watch them.
I was going to say, I didn't know that.
Sir was secret camming us the whole time.
What else did I do? I forgot which episode it was. I think it was, like, just, like, greatest stuff list. Kyle, does Kyle get more ass than a toilet seat?
Oh God, that was did I talk about my disclaimer for the next episode about my lyrics were the worst ever?
Oh man,
I was not happy with that list at all.
Kyle channeling Nate Dogg.
Yeah. That's funny. Just that was Lisa's actually favorite.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I had
I had to not translate it, but.
Say it.
Yeah, you had to translate it from the streets.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So, join us again next week. We're going to be talking about something. What are we talking about next week, you guys?
No. Outlaw Couple. I'm not ready for the other one.
All right. We're going to talk about Outlaw Couple next week. As always, I've been your host, Nick Prime, and we have been...
Sir.
And Kyle Prime.
And join us again next week when we stuck...
Earn their the traps. Mental deterioration.
Either you guys watch Adventure Time?